You're listening to the Fix My Feet podcast. Solutions for every step in your journey with the nation's leading foot and ankle specialists.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Fix My Feet podcast. Dr. Waters with Ashley Anderson, my PA, here today to talk about something interesting that we don't talk about a lot, but is super important in the foot and ankle world, which is gait, in other words, how we walk, the process by which we walk, what happens in the foot when we walk, and what happens when we have certain conditions like flat feet or cavus feet, really high arch foot, and how that might change our gait a little bit, and why you might be having some of the pain in your foot that you do have in because of gait abnormalities, and how those things can kind of be addressed. So we probably won't get to all of that in our short little 15-20 minutes, but we'll try to get to some of it. So how are you doing this morning, Ashley?
Pretty good.
Yeah, good. So we're going to tackle this big topic, also known as biomechanics, is another thing that it's commonly called. But essentially, when we walk, we biomechanically typically break it down into three stages, you know, where we have the heel strike, and then what's called mid stance, and then the propulsive periods of gait. And there's unique things going on during all those stages of gait. Different muscles are firing, and different tendons are working. So, but that's kind of the three things. And the thing that's going on in the foot is the foot is adapting to the changes, and then also making its own changes throughout that time. So typically we say the foot goes from a very adaptable to a more rigid structure. So Ashley, your thoughts about that, maybe you can explain that a little bit better to those listening to the podcast today.
Yeah, it's as you are moving through from that heel strike to mid stance, as you put your heel down and it rolls down to the floor, that's more of the flexible phase, or that phase where it changes. And that's more like the middle part of the foot has more movement to it than that outside part of the foot. So as your heel strike, you're going through that middle part of your foot. And then as you get up to your toes to propulse off, as you're in that mid stance, is turning into a more stable construct. So that way you are on a firm position. You have everything firing. You're like storing that kinetic energy to be able to push off and like get you moving forward to propulse. So the things that can kind of happen if you have more of a flexible foot beyond what's normal is that can happen like more as your phase when you're going that heel strike to mid stance phase, that can be more affected. And then like if you have a cavus foot, which already it's a little bit more stiff than what it is normal, then you are not rolling through as much and maybe already in that more stable, sturdy construct just because of your natural foot deformity.
Yeah, well said. So you're going from this, and some people, you know, the easiest way to explain is during that mobile adaption phase where you're almost absorbing ground reactive forces, the foot is flattening. It's lowering the arch. It's more spread out to absorb those forces and convert those forward forces into forward energy. And then we always say it becomes then a rigid lever as we go through what's called supination. So the absorption is called pronation, and then it becomes a rigid lever through what we call supination, where there's a little bit, to explain it, like the foot rotates kind of towards the outside of the foot for a simple explanation. And that rigid lever is what allows the body to then propulse forward and, you know, move the center of mass of the whole body forward to the next step. And you need that rigid construct to be able to push that center of mass up and forward onto the next step. And so you need both abilities. You need the ability to mobily adapt and absorb energy, and you also need the ability to supinate and become a rigid lever to propulse forward. And so what Ashley is talking about and what we see commonly in the clinic, and why this is kind of important to understand if you're thinking about your foot, when you have, let's say, you're a flat-footed person, some flat-footed people, not all, so I don't want to be universal here, some people with excessive flat foot do not really become a rigid lever. They lack the ability, especially as the pathology progresses, to supinate enough. And so that causes very common issues. And most of those exist on the inside of the ankle, if you're looking at it from a patient's perspective. What, Ashley, are some of those things? If somebody's wondering, listening to this, do I supinate enough? Am I really flat-footed? What are some of the common issues we see in people who have progressive flat foot issues, who maybe aren't supinating enough during that phase of gait?
I'd say a lot of times it's like Dr. Waters mentioned, it's stuff on that inside part of the foot. So people will have pain in their posterior tibial tendon, which is the tendon that runs right behind that ankle bone on the inside part of your foot. People who are walking, like these are the people, you know, that you have like a pancake, like if your foot was wet and your whole foot is touching the ground when you're walking. So you notice that you're having caving in of the arch. So sometimes if it's progressive, people can get like calluses and stuff like that in the middle of their foot because their foot has caved down so much. I think a lot of it is just pain on the inside part of the medial column of the foot, that part where arthritis definitely occurs because of like pronation through that middle part of the foot in a different kind of manner. But so definitely like arthritis, that tendonitis, kind of those are the big ones, I would say.
Great. Well said. The only other one that I think of symptom-wise, and it's not necessarily a pathology, but on the lateral side, we see what's called impingement pain, where the fibula, which is your outside ankle bone, starts to butt up against your calcaneus, which is your heel bone. And where those two kind of meet and pinch against each other, we see impingement pain in that area with people with this condition. And so So those are some of the things, you know, if you're wondering, I'm always getting like this inside ankle pain. It seems to be worse when I'm walking or after, you know, prolonged periods of time. That's something to think about. You know, you may have a progressing flat foot type of a deformity or a collapsing foot deformity, which is, you know, important to understand. The other thing I would say that we don't talk about enough with our patients, you know, it's talked about a lot within profession, is so in the middle part of your foot, you have a joint called the metatarsal joint, which is two joints actually combined. And so what happens when we're talking about this with flat feet, that joint, as you go from pronation, which is flattening of the arch, to supination, that joint has to lock, what we call locking of that joint, to become that rigid lever. And in a person who has a progressive collapsing foot deformity, we don't see that locking of that joint. So it's very minimal, if at all, that joint locks. And so that's another reason why they struggle. They start to develop the symptoms that Ashley just talked about, is because of some of these mechanical issues that are going on. And so we develop those types of issues. And one of the goals we have, whether that's surgical intervention or non-surgical intervention, is to try and help that metatarsal joint lock so that the mechanics of the foot can work in a more correct fashion. So that's one of the goals we have in the treatment of this whole thing. So we kind of talked about excessive pronation and what you might see with that. The conversely, some people have what's called a cavus foot, which is a foot that has a really high arch. Those who have it know that they have it. Those who don't are wondering what Dr. Waters is talking about right now. So, but some people have this really excessively high arch. And they struggle with the exact opposite problem that we just talked about. They tend to stay in that rigid phase almost throughout the whole gait cycle. And symptoms that they usually present with, Ashley, those with like rigid cavus feet?
They're on the opposite side of the foot. So it's all of those tendons on your outside ankle. People who have some of that, just kind of what Dr. Waters was talking about with the pain with flat foot on the opposite side from impingement, people who can have some medial ankle pain kind of just from all of that force on the outside part of their ankle. So as you are walking and you're constantly putting force on those outside parts of the foot, outside part of the ankle, you can get a lot of just ankle instability from just wear and tear. Also wear and tear on the peroneal tendons, which are on the outside part of that ankle. And then the instability can lead to arthritis or impingement in your ankle joint. And so then that can cause medial ankle pain or inside ankle pain because of the stuff that's happening on the outside part of the foot. And then I'd say the other one that isn't necessarily up with the ankle is there's a, your fifth metatarsal is that long bone that leads into your pinky toe. And there's that fifth metatarsal head. A ton of people who have cavus feet, I would say, have a big callus there or a painful spot. So that's really common.
Yeah, those are definitely your pressure points. Commonly, under the fifth metatarsal head, like Ashley said, also commonly under the first metatarsal head because their first metatarsal will be plantar flexed. So we see big callus formation in those areas with people with this foot. And we see all the symptoms Ashley talked about on the other side of the foot, the lateral side, the outside part of the foot, because they're not pronating. And so the medial structures are not doing as much. There's a few causes of cavus foot. Some is just an acquired defect, but sometimes we have some neuromuscular conditions that cause cavus to develop as well. And so that, part of being evaluated properly is coming in and having all that assessed. Is this just acquired cavus deformity, or is this a neuromuscular condition that might be causing some weakening of some of the muscle groups and therefore resulting in a cavus deformity? I think that's one of the important things about coming in, being evaluated, being worked up, trying to figure those things out so the right things happen to you. But regardless, I always tell patients, like, especially with cavus foot, do you notice that you wear the outside part of your shoe down really quickly? I think that's a telltale sign for somebody who might not fully understand what's going on with the mechanics of their foot, is that outside part of the shoe tends to wear down. Like, they're replacing their shoes consistently because the outside part of the sole of their shoe is wearing excessively because they don't really have that much pronation. And likewise, when we just talked about excessive flat feet, those people sometimes will wear the inside part of their shoe down excessively because of, they're always on the inside part of their foot. And so those are two conditions that happen. They're kind of the opposites of each other as we look at the opposite ends of the spectrum from one another that are caused when the foot can't mobile adapt and then become rigid and go through the true biomechanical series that the foot is supposed to go through. And so those are two kinds of things, very common things that a lot of people have. Some people have a mild variation of one or the other that causes some of these symptoms. The other thing that we haven't really addressed inside of this topic is the role of Aquinas. And so, Ashley, do you want to kind of explain what Aquinas is, because that's a big word. Dr. Waters, what are you talking about? So,
yeah, Aquinas is, it's a little tricky to, I guess, understand and explain fully, but basis of it is having really tight calves or a really tight posterior muscle group of the back of your lower leg. Your muscles on the back of your lower leg extend up above the knee, your gastrocnemius muscle does, and then they both attach down to, you have two muscles back there. You have your gastrocnemius muscle and your soleus muscle. And so you've got these two, well, you got more muscles, but those are the two powerhouse muscles. And so if you think about it, when you are firing these muscles and they're contracting or making their movement as a muscle, it's when you are like up on your toes or when you're plantar flexed. That's when they're tight. So if you're just walking normally, if you're in 90 degrees, those muscles should kind of be in this. They shouldn't be contracted. They should be more so if you're just standing in more of a stretched, relaxed phase, if you're pulling your toes back. Through the gait cycle, they do fire and they do what they're supposed to do. But people who have Aquinas are overly tight in those muscles. So you have calves that are trying to pull on your heel bone. They attach through your Achilles tendon onto your calcaneus. So you're constantly having that force from the muscles, from them being tight or more in a contracted position, if you want to think about it like that, even if you're not firing them. And so then because you have that force through the muscle with them being back, you're not able to actually dorsiflex or flex your toes back up to your face as much as you should be able to. That force has to be redistributed in a different way. So your foot has to accommodate that tightness in the back of your calf. So we see this all the time. People have really tight calves leading into a lot of other issues that are going on with the foot.
Yeah, it throws your mechanics off, just like Ashley said. If you stand there and you can't stand there without your heels coming off the ground a little bit, then the foot has to compensate for that because you don't have enough, as she said, dorsiflexion. And so the foot is going to say, we got to get on the ground. We're not going to walk on our toes the rest of our life. And you see, we see kids as toe walkers who have this significantly, right? And so the foot usually does that, most commonly does that through pronation, where the foot wants to flatten out a lot. And that's one of the main drivers of acquired and collapsing foot deformity. So that's something we certainly assess when we talked about that earlier. But, you know, it throws the, you never are able to get into that mobile adaption phase. So you stay more in the rigid lever. The foot wants to supinate more because you can't ever get as much. And so the foot has to compensate. And so that compensation usually leads to similar pathologies as we see with somebody who has an excessive flat foot deformity. Those would be the most common pathologies that we see. But we also see this creating problems with people with cavus feet. We see this with people who have calluses in their forefoot where they're overloading the front of the foot because they never spend enough time in heel strike. They're going from heel strike to propulsion very quickly with what we call early heel off, where the heel is coming off the ground early because of the Aquinas contracture. And so they're overloading their forefoot. In our diabetic patients, we see callus formation and then we see wound formation in the front of the foot because of Aquinas. And so that's certainly one of the things we importantly try to address in our diabetic patients. Is Aquinas, because when they overload the forefoot, they get breakdown, they get wounds, and those wounds can lead to amputation and some risky things that happen there. So, you know, the Aquinas would be the third thing, and we can't go over all. I mean, I have five more things in my head right now that have to do with biomechanical compensations of the foot. We won't get to all of them today. But these are, I think, the three most common that we deal with all the time, either a flat foot, which is excessive pronation, cavus foot, excessive supination, or and Aquinas, those three for sure. So if you have plantar fasciitis, for example, there, which is probably everybody listening to this podcast might have plantar fasciitis in some way or another, Aquinas. Almost always. I never say 100% of the time. There's no 100 and there's no zero in medicine. But most of the time, you're dealing with some level of Aquinas. So if you get on YouTube, you'll see that they want you to stretch your calves. I mean, that's one of the main things that they want you to do. And I 100% agree with that from a biomechanical point of view, that you've got to improve your range of motion to get rid of the plantar fasciitis. So super, super important things. Very technical things today. Lots. We could get even more technical. I try to keep it on the superficial level today as far as the technicality of biomechanics goes. The last thing I want to talk about with biomechanics, there's two ways from a physician provider standpoint that we try to work and address faulty biomechanics. I'm going to let Ashley talk about the non-operative stuff, and then I'm briefly going to talk about the operative stuff. What is the most common thing we do, Ashley, to try and assess and help biomechanics in a non-operative way?
The main thing is getting you in a good pair of custom orthotics. I mean, really, if you are consistently walking in the way that you always walk, you're already walking in a way that isn't evening out your mechanics, because you either an excessive pronator, excessive supinator, you've got these really tight calves. One of the things that we can do is get you in a pair of custom orthotics that isn't going to change your foot in the way you're walking. It's going to let you walk the same way, so you don't have to try to change your gait. It's just putting you in a device that is going to change it for you. So it will offload or put more pressure on a certain part of your foot to even out that gait, give you support that you don't have. So definitely the custom orthotics are super important, and we talk about that with our patients all the time.
So, I mean, we could do a whole podcast about orthotics, so I'm not going to try and dive too deep in here. But for those who are listening who are thinking, yeah, I went to Walmart, I saw orthotics on the shelf, I can get orthotics, and it, you know, they listen to this and they've diagnosed themselves, I'm a pronator, like I need to get something to help control pronation. What would you say to them? The advantage is over something custom, like we've discussed, which I totally agree with you. That is the best solution versus maybe what they might run into at Walmart or the shoe store that they go to or the chiropractor that they visit that has something on the shelf. Like what's the difference there?
The type of orthotic that you'd be getting off the shelf, any type of off the shelf orthotic, it just has your basic, whatever they decided to put in there as an arch, and that's what you get. So some of the ones like at Walmart or whatever, they're really not going to have any sort of firmness to an arch. It's going to be kind of worthless if you want to think about it, just because it's not, unless you're going for cushion, then maybe that's what it's good for. But a lot of times if you need something structural, you need it to be assessed appropriately. I've seen multiple patients who have just grabbed a orthotic off online or something like that, and it's not made correctly. So it actually made their problem worse and their feet hurt even more. So I think it's definitely important to not put yourself in an orthotic that isn't right for your foot either. And so all the risk you run is either getting an orthotic that isn't going to really help because it doesn't have a good enough type of material that it's made with, and you're just going to keep bending through the orthotic even after spending $50, $60 for it. And then the other thing would just be sometimes can make it even worse. Or if you have a really high arch, you get one of those off the counter or off the shelf, your arch isn't even going to really touch it because that arch is so low compared to what your natural foot type is. So it just run the risk of it being a waste of money for you.
Yeah, no, that's well said. You know what? I think for the easiest thing I say, when you walk, you exert 2.5 times your body weight across the bottom of the foot as we go through mid stance and into propulsion periods of gait. And so you need something, if you're trying to alter biomechanics and position of foot, and you need something that's strong enough to withstand that kind of force. And so there's very little that's out there that is a non-custom world that I think would withstand that for any significant period of time. So orthotics, 100% agree with that. Like, we do those, we believe in those. Like, it's a big part of what we do to help patients and help them feel better. And I have my own. I'll preach to everybody. I have my own. They changed a lot of my life with foot pain. So, but there are conditions where even orthotics are not going to be able to fix those kinds of things. And that's where the surgical side comes in. And in surgery, our goal is to do surgery that helps realign the biomechanics of the foot so the foot can function in that more normal phase that we talked about, from heel strike to mid stance to propulsion. And so a lot of times that is, you know, and each patient is a little unique, but a lot of time is cutting bones, repositioning the where the tendons operate in the foot, redoing the internal structure of the foot so that tendons can operate more correctly. But the bottom line of all surgical intervention is to understand the biomechanics, what we're trying to alter, and then make a plan specifically for each patient to be able to get their foot into that neutral position, allow them to function, and allow them to heal and do better after surgery. So both things, both custom orthotics and surgery, are after the same goal, and that is improving the biomechanics of the foot. Some conditions require surgical intervention, and some a lot more. We do more orthotics than we do surgery, so more are treated with surgical with orthotics, but both are after the same thing. And so that's why it's kind of, I wanted to do this. It's very technical, more technical than we've ever done on here. So, but it is a very technical subject, but important if you're having foot pain to try and have a baseline understanding of some of this stuff. So hopefully we didn't confuse everybody today with this stuff, but we'd love to, you know, have comments. If you have questions, always feel free to drop a comment. We'll try to address those. Anything else, Ashley, parting words of wisdom on biomechanics before we get off here today?
No, I think we kind of broke it down, so.
We did something for sure. So for Dr. Waters and Ashley Anderson, this is Fix My Feet Podcast. Check us out on all of our social media outlets. Podcast is on YouTube every week, Spotify, Apple, all the appropriate podcast outlets. I think I forgot to mention this, but we crossed 1,000 downloads. I got that email this week, so that's kind of exciting. So we appreciate all those who download and listen to us and interact with us as far as the podcast goes. So check us out, social media, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, Platte River Foot and Ankle Surgeons is where you can also check us out. Some of our cute MA TikToks, if you're curious about those, are out there. Look forward to next week. Thanks, Ashley.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Fix My Feet Podcast. To schedule an appointment with one of our providers, visit www.prfootandankle.com.